So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup. Haha, okay. I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be talking about Season 3, Episode 2 of Love After Lockup, where we continue our journey with the five couples from last week. We meet Lindsay's daughter Miley Grace, who seems to genuinely get along with Lindsay's boyfriend Scott. Chevelle picks up Quaylon's mom, Quaylandria, as they make their way to pick up Quaylon from prison. Jessica waits for hours for Maurice to get dropped off the prison van. John puts his proposal, wedding, honeymoon caravan in motion, and Sean meets up with his ex Kelly and his daughter while lying to Kelly about how much money he has really spent on Destiny. We will discuss their stories and students of the week, class dunces, and life lessons. At the very end of the podcast, we will also briefly discuss a few spoilers from Starcasm. If you like what you hear, please support us and leave a 5-star rating or any other constructive comments are welcome. And if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, kind of getting ready, starting to gear up for this virtual schooling. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, goodness. They have not told me anything, so there is nothing for me to gear up for.
I got a sample possible schedule today, which is better than nothing.
Oh, goodness. Maybe I should check my email. Then maybe I would be a little bit more informed.
Yeah, we talked about how your school email is not on your notifications, and mine is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a problem. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with this week. I'll go ahead and get started with Maurice and Jessica. So Jessica's getting ready to pick up Maurice from prison. She tells us that Maurice got in trouble 2 years ago for attempting to sneak drugs into prison. So as a punishment, visitation was taken away from him. So Jessica has not seen Maurice in 2 years. But prior to that, we are told that Maurice got conjugal visits since they are married. And she describes Maurice as an energizer bunny. Use your imagination. She's excited to show up for sexy for Maurice and tells us that she is usually wearing sweats for visits, but this time Jessica's wearing a short dress and her boobs are all out. Jessica's worried that their relationship will be really different in real life. She worries that Maurice has been using her because she tells us that conjugal visits can only happen between a married couple, so that's why they got married. She worries that Maurice was just using her for sex because he was talking to other women who were sending him money before they got married. Jessica is waiting impatiently, pacing back and forth, waiting for Maurice to be released. Maurice finally gets out of the prison van and Jessica goes to kiss him and cries a little. Maurice tells us that he feels exuberated. Maurice is excited to be out, away from the prison and his fake-ass friends, and more importantly, free to have sex. So that was pretty much their segment, is Maurice getting out and their reunion. So predictions. Yeah. Do you think Maurice was using Jessica for sex, or do you think he saw something in her that he really wanted to lock down for life?
I think I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think there was a little bit more there. I think that the complications of being on the outside might not make him the most reliable partner at the end of the day. But I do think I do take him at his good faith word that he wasn't just like, you know, gotta lock this down for sex.
Yeah. I kind of wonder a little bit, you know, and this goes with, I feel like I've seen a lot of like the ex-cons kind of say this. It's like, this person was there for me when I was at my lowest. And so they almost feel like the sense of loyalty to them because it's like, this is my ride or die. I need to be there for them. This is my person because they were there for me through like the hardest of times. And then it's almost like not about them, but the idea that this person is like all in with you.
That's true. But it also seems like that's what it also seems like a lot of times the person on the outside is the one convincing themselves of that. Like I was there for them when nobody else was. Therefore, they almost like owe me. Like, of course they're going to be there for me. Look at all I did for them. Nobody else was there for them. Everybody out there, family had abandoned them. They had nothing. And so here I – so they kind of owe me. And a lot of times they the con doesn't feel that way necessarily. Now, sometimes they do. But it's like if they both feel that way, then it can work. But a lot of times it's just like one person projecting.
Yeah, and so that's the only thing that I really worry about with them is, like, I don't know. He does seem like he's into her. I'm not saying he isn't, you know, but I do kind of wonder if he could have had conjugal visits with anyone. Do you think he would be married to Jessica? I don't know
if that would be
happening, right?
That's true. If he could have been like, oh, that's your girlfriend. You get to have a conjugal visit with her too. Then
yeah.
He'd be like, oh, I'll just have some girlfriends then. Okay.
Yeah. I'll have multiple girlfriends.
Yeah. I mean, and we know, like, no matter what he believes or thinks now, it's a huge difference between, you know, what they had, where literally every time you saw them, you were basically just like, we're here for sex now, versus like actually living with someone all the time. Like, it's not like, I think it'll be a really fun week for him. But after that, like, you know, after that, and they're just kind of stuck with, oh, we have to do stuff besides having sex. What is that stuff? I don't know.
Yeah, that is interesting, because in a conjugal visit, I'm assuming that's like, that's what, it's not like you're sitting there like having long conversations overnight, you know?
No, it's, I like, feel like it's like you get a half hour or whatever, and then they're like, yeah, it's time limited. So it's like, we gotta get the show on the road.
Right. So, yeah. Yeah, it will be interesting to see like what their relationship looks like when sex isn't happening all the time.
Right. Because I felt bad for her, because you said she was sitting there impatiently, but she was sitting out there for hours.
Yeah. I mean, I said impatiently because it was just like, she's just like, where is he? And like fretting and wringing her hands and pacing back and forth.
Yeah.
And
I couldn't believe she kept that up for so long. Like, it's, yeah. I get when you first get there and you're nervous, but like, I feel like after like the third hour of that, you're like, oh man, that's a lot of energy to just be there shaking.
I know. Can I just take a nap in my car and someone like knock on my window when they're here?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, well, between that and, you know, the, it seems really harsh, super harsh that he did something wrong. And so they're responsible for taking away all visitors for 2 years. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's just between that and like, not even, we're not going to let the person on the outside waiting for you, what's going on. We're not going to let them know what's going on. We're just going to drop you off whenever we goddamn feel like it. Like, it's, that kind of, this kind of stuff that strikes you is how harsh the prison system really is.
So I got the impression that the reason why he got visitors taken away is because maybe visitors were the source of his problem to begin with. Mm-hmm. Because they were saying that the reason why he got in trouble was because he was smuggling drugs into prison.
Right.
And he was dealing. So if the visitors he's had is the source of the drugs that he's trying to smuggle in, I can 100% see how that is what gets taken away.
Yeah, I guess the thing that got me was 2 years.
That does seem like a long time.
A long time.
Yeah, but I guess visitors in general are a privilege.
I guess so. I don't know how you could be in prison and not go nuts with that kind of stuff. Like, oh, geez.
Especially what he was saying, fake ass friends. He just kind of threw that out there, like,
yeah,
okay, you know, I had friends, but just pretended to be friends with them in prison.
I bet you pretty much do, because you don't have many options on who your friends are.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right? And so it's like a protection thing.
Yeah. I got to get along with these guys or else. So I guess I'll get along with these guys. And like, they're all the same about you. So I couldn't, I don't know that I could trust any prison friendship like that. But all right. So moving on, I'm going to start with John and Christiana. So a limo pulls up to John's place in the pre-dawn hours, and a stressed out John tells everybody the plan. First, the limo and the chapel/honeymoon suite. Will drive to a park near the prison. Then they'll set up and John will get in the limo to meet Christiana with the limo when she gets out. He'll propose outside the prison and then proceed to the crime scene number two, the park where the wedding truck is, for the wedding, a quickie, and then hitting the road. They have about 40 minutes to pull all this off before they need to be on the road to the halfway house. So everyone starts on their way and they start setting up the truck. He notably did not paint the stairs, as we asked last time.
Yeah.
Although he did have like a bolt of purple fabric to drape over it. The rest of the purple fabric he uses to cover up the door of the truck so no one can see him when he has sex with Christiana in the back seat.
God, so gross.
While they're setting up, John tells us now about how this marriage, unlike his other four marriages, which, by the way, we learned this time, two of them were to the same woman, is bound to work because he has love and whatever, yada, yada, yada. As he rides to the prison in the limo, he talks to the driver about the plan. John says it's all in the creator's hands now, and there's nothing more for him to do. The driver just seems to be really hope that the ride back isn't going to be super awkward if she says no. Then they park the limo on a weird grassy embankment near the prison, and John gets out to wait for his bride wearing a black shirt with purple fringe and some super 90s style loose fit jeans.
Oh, goodness.
They wait for a little while after she's supposed to get out, and soon a car drops her off, carrying all of her belongings in a box. John runs to greet her, but lets her keep carrying the box. She asks if they're taking the limo all the way back, and John says, negative. The limo driver finally takes the box from her hands, and we get to hear Christiana for the first time. She's been in and out of jail mainly because of her drug problem, but she's hopeful with John because he isn't an addict, and he seems to truly love and accept her for who she is, which is what she's always wanted. As the episode ends, John hurriedly gets down on one knee and proposes, but we'll have to wait for next week to see her answer. All right, so let's go back. Let's start with John's planning here. If you only have enough money to drive a limo one way, why do you use it to drive up there alone? Wouldn't you use it to drive back with her in the limo?
I don't know. I think he wants to get married in the truck, I guess.
Right.
I don't know. But I think the halfway house is also really far. Because didn't he say the halfway house was like 3 hours away?
Okay, so the halfway house isn't by his house.
No.
Because I thought his house was like 3 hours away from the prison too. I thought the halfway house was at least somewhat close to his house.
I don't know if I got that impression. But yeah, it's like 3 hours away. So I don't know. I feel like money is the issue here, right?
Right, but if you only have money for the limo ride for one leg of the trip,
yeah.
Wouldn't you want her in the limo for that leg of the trip? Why are you wasting the money driving the limo by, like, alone? Like, just have a limo meet you at the prison.
Maybe that you can't have sex in the back of the limo. I don't know. Is there some kind of, like...
But that's the thing. He didn't seem like he was going to have sex on the road. He had the truck set up so he could have sex before they left.
I feel like it could keep happening. He's got the curtains off. Oh, gross. No, the curtains would fly open. No.
Apparently, yeah. Apparently, that's what I've heard from people who are truck drivers is people do all kinds of freaky stuff in cars because drivers are like way up high and they can see car and like... I think that just comes with being a truck driver is having all kinds of crazy stories about what you've seen people be doing in cars.
Yeah, I believe it. So we get to hear from her for the first time. Her voice sounds so different in the interviews. It sounds like she's a chain smoker.
Oh, sure. I mean, that doesn't surprise you. I don't know very many, you know, drug addicts that don't also smoke.
Yeah, yeah. So the proposal that when he started off, it, like, the way he said it made it sound so serious. Like, he had some bad news to tell her, like, her dog died or something.
Grabbed her and squared her up right at his face and was like, we have to have a talk. Like, that is not...
Yeah. That's not the start of a proposal. Like,
yeah, that's usually the start of...
An intervention or something.
Right. Yes. I was going to say I killed your dog, but...
yeah, both.
I need you to focus on me here. We have a problem. Yes.
Right. Yeah, it was odd. And I was just like, if I were her, I'd be taken aback too. Like, what am I supposed to be expecting from you right at this moment?
This is clearly a woman, if she's been in and out of jail and, you know, people have been in and out of her life due to her addiction. This is a woman who has heard, we have to talk many times before.
And her first thought is probably run away.
Right.
Yeah, really interesting. All right, moving on to Chevelle and Quaylon. And it's really more like Chevelle and Quaylon's mom. Chevelle is packing up her daughter so she can stay at Nana's house while Chevelle picks up Quaylon. We find that the daughter also can't say her future daddy's name, right? As she calls him Kaylin. Chevelle tells us that the moment she knew Quaylon was the one was when he sent her daughter a birthday card. Chevelle's mom, Sylvia, has a quick heart-to-heart with Chevelle where she checks in with Chevelle and gives her a pep talk that says she needs to rely on her relationship with God and her own moral compass. Sylvia also tells her to look for red flags and signs and leave him if she sees any. She hopes that Quaylon is a blessing and not a lesson. Quaylon tells us that Chevelle needs to get approval from his mom in order for this to continue. He tells us that his mom wants him in Texas under her watchful eye. He also tells us how different things were when he went to prison. To give us some idea, he tells us that everyone had flip phones and he was on MySpace. Chevelle is driving to pick up Quaylon's mom and she is nervous. She wants to get to know her, but she worries that his mom will view her as the one taking him away from her. We meet Quaylandria, who gives Chevelle a very warm welcome greeting and a hug. She is in a good mood because she is excited to see her son. Chevelle says something about Quaylon living in Kansas City, and Quaylandria says, "Hold up! This is news to me." Chevelle tells her that Quaylon told her that he had told his mom he was going to stay in Kansas City. Quaylandria says that it's been 12 years and she wants him close and it's just common sense. Chevelle is stuck arguing with his mom because one of them has been lied to. Quaylandria says that this is about family connecting and that she will take him and walk right out of there. So who do you think Quaylon lied to?
I don't know if he knows who he lied to yet. Because I don't think he doesn't know what he's going to do. Like, I think he.
Oh, okay. That was my second question is like, what do you think he will do?
Because, I mean, obviously, and I am going on both of them here, he clearly told them completely different things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he told them both that, well, completely different, meaning the same thing. I'm going to live with you in Kansas City. I'm going to live with you in Texas.
Right, right. So he told them different. He told them both what they wanted to hear.
Right. But I feel like he has to have some idea because isn't one of the things of being on parole is you have to give them an address.
Right, but I think you can do that. Like, I think like when the person picks you up, they can put an address down. Like, and I this is what I don't like. I think he was like, I think this is why he set up this whole road trip for them is basically like, you guys figure it out. You know, because I think you can send the address. I think the person who walks in will be like, here's my address. They can write it down like on their way out the door. You can write down the address that you're going to be at.
Well, the other thing is I feel like Quaylandria, his mom, basically said like, oh, well, I will walk out of there and we're going to my house kind of thing.
Right.
With what? She's not the one she driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Uber all the way to Texas.
You're going to go to Texas? Good luck, guys. I'm driving back to Kansas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what she thinks is going to happen in that particular situation. Now, I get that she didn't know that that was even a possibility. I think she just thought this sweet little Chevelle was just going to, you know, chauffeur them around everywhere.
I guess yes and no. Like, did you – I mean, at some point, you got to think and you're like, wait a second. He's got this girlfriend who's driving to pick him up at, you know, at the prison. So obviously he thinks it's serious and she doesn't live in Houston. I know she doesn't live in Houston. Like, does she think that Chevelle is going to be like, oh yeah, we were, couldn't see each other because you were in prison for 12 years or, you know, 2 years of a relationship. And then as soon as you get out, be like, yeah, and that will do a distance thing in Houston to Kansas City. No, she wasn't going to do that. Who would do that?
Right.
Like, that's a weird expectation to have from the mother's perspective.
Yeah, but I don't think the mom is thinking that far ahead. She probably, like, this girl means nothing. They were just pen pals. She's just helping out. Like, this girl's going to be gone in a month.
Oh, I'm sure she does. And I'm sure she's like, that's why he can't live it with you, because you're going to be gone in a month. And then he's going to fall in with his old people. Because, and I really feel the mom here, she specifically moved away from Kansas City so that when Quaylon got out, he could have a fresh start and not have to, like, because he's going to fall in with the same people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate concern. But is he even allowed to get paroled into a different state? I don't really know how that works.
I think it doesn't matter either way. Like, I get the impression from the way they were all talking that Chevelle lives in the Kansas side of Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they don't say Kansas City. They say Kansas in Kansas and Kansas in Kansas. So I think but he's definitely in prison. And whatever he did was in the Missouri side of Kansas City because he's in prison in Missouri. And it's a Missouri state prison.
Okay.
So either way, he's getting paroled outside the state. But yeah.
I wonder how that works, though. Like, because wouldn't that seem like a use of some other state's resources?
Right.
For you to because
he's going
to their parole officer.
Yeah, their parole officers, their halfway houses, all that stuff like that. Yeah. You would.
Yeah.
But I guess it's kind of a reciprocal thing. You're like, yeah, we'll take some, you'll take some, whatever. It all evens out close enough in the end. rather than just like kicking it. Like, I'm sure if Missouri like kicked all of their, you know, ex-cons into Arkansas, they'd be like, hey, wait a second.
We're not about that.
This is not okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting because I wonder if he kind of has like a parole officer in Texas and then he just has to check in Missouri every so often too.
Yeah, well, and it's also because this time they were talking about – I find it fascinating the different ways this all works because every other one was like, oh, well, we got to get him to the halfway house, right? Yeah. And this one they were just like, oh, is he coming to my house or your house? Like there was no halfway house mentioned at all.
Right. I definitely think the halfway houses are in specific circumstances. And I want to say like the drug related ones specifically, mm-hmm. you know, like if we kind of think about the ones that I can think of that have been on the show that have been required to go at a halfway house. And I'm not saying all of them because there have definitely been some drug related offenses where they haven't had to go to a halfway house. But I would say a lot of them that all the ones that I can think of that are have been required mm-hmm. to be in halfway houses have had some kind of drugs.
Well, yeah. The related. Other thing that we don't know is we're not 100% sure because you said parole. I'm not sure if this is parole. He might just be done with his sentence.
Well, yeah, that'd be good. I mean, he started off so young, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. That if this is just a release, you know, there's no checking in with the parole officer or anything like that. You're done.
Well, then he can go where he wants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for him.
Good for him. Well, we'll see how this works out because, right. Oh man, it looks like something. All right, moving on. So this is, I'm going to go Scott and Lindsay. Ugh. So it is Lindsay's release day and Scott is getting ready to pick her up at the airport. It will be the first time he has seen her face to face. He is packing a bag of clothes and stuff to have at the halfway house. He tells us about each thing he's putting on there, like her, quote, designer panties.
Yeah, right.
They were pink. Like, that was not even... Okay.
Yeah.
And the most expensive iPhone on the market. He says altogether is about $1,500 worth of stuff in there. Then Scott goes to visit Lindsay's mom, who is biologically her grandmother, and her name's Brenda, and her daughter, Miley Grace, at a park. As he drives, he muses about Lindsay and her family. He seems to think that Lindsay doesn't so much find trouble, but trouble finds her, and this is somehow related to her being pretty. And he also doesn't think that this whole thing is a scam because what kind of scammer has their mother invite you to Thanksgiving and in basically into the family? The meeting that they have is to set up the logistics of a release, which it really isn't much because there's not much of a meeting that couldn't have happened over text. But really, it's to give us a lot of background information to the main players of the story. Brenda, for her part, was blindsided by Lindsay's dark side and didn't know she was in any kind of trouble until after she had graduated from community college. Lindsay tells us that back then she started using meth and then started dealing to pay for her habit. But she turned out to be quite good at it and started making way too much money to justify staying in school. And then she tells us that she's just bad at being good, which I feel like is a line she's practiced many, many times.
Yeah.
We also hear from Miley Grace, who is very excited for today. Her mom has been locked up for almost half of her life and she hasn't met her face to face in a year. Miley Grace is thankful that Scott has come into her life. She says it's because he buys her clothes, but it actually doesn't come across as spoiled. She seems genuinely grateful that there's someone around that can help the family. We see Scott playing in the park with Miley Grace, who he is actually really good with. And then Scott gives us some important and tragic background from his life. We learn that his son Connor was killed in a car accident at 17 years old, and understandably, Scott has really never gotten over it. So I know last week we did first impressions, but I think there's enough stuff that like kind of came out of this story today mm-hmm. that is like, what are we, are you already kind of reevaluating your first impressions here?
I am. And it almost pains me to say I am. So let's talk about Scott first.
Right.
It started off with him just being, I think what it is that I also don't like about him, he just seems so pretentious. Like him telling us that, you know, these designer panties. Yeah, someone designed them, Victoria's Secret Pink Collection, but seriously, you can get them for like less than $5 a piece.
Yeah, that's about right.
Is that really designer?
Right.
Yeah. It's like that 5 for $24 or something like that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's like,
you're right on $5. Five and ten, like normal price. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like, I don't know why you think that this is special.
Mm-hmm.
It's like normal, right? I would say it's average, if anything. Average to slightly below average.
Yes, I would agree that is the, like, I don't know. I guess Hanes is probably your median level panty. So it's like, it's like the Target of panties instead of the Walmart of panties is basically where
right,
we're at, right.
Right. So, yeah, but it's like, so you get that side of Scott where you're just like, oh, this guy, like, everything's about money, you know? Mm-hmm. He definitely seems to lead with money. Like, you know, even with the weird interior designer interaction he had, like, how much are you willing to spend on this? He's like, I don't know, $1 to $1 million.
Right.
It's like, uh-huh, okay. So I feel like he just throws money around. It makes him feel important. And mm-hmm. so that's the side of him that I'm just like, eh, I don't like you.
Right.
Yeah. But- and even with the daughter, like Miley Grace, like him pretty much like throwing money at that situation. And it's almost like he's using money to get people to like him,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so like you said, I don't think she came off especially spoiled about it. I think that she was in desperate need of clothes, which is probably right. why she was really appreciative of it. But the way he kind of talked about it is just like, ooh, that's, I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Right.
But then when you actually saw him like playing around with Miley Grace,
right.
Like even yeah. when he said, I wouldn't even do this for your mom as he gets on that weird like swingy thing. You know, and then when he was talking about, you know, his greatest joy of life was raising his son and how much his son meant to him and, you know, how it really messed him up when his son died in that tragic accident. It's really like, well, okay, maybe this guy is more than just about himself, because I think everything kind of leading up to this has been like he's really selfish. He really seems to want this young girl
yeah.
to kind of be a trophy wife. To kind of be like, hey, I can have, like, sex with this, like, young, hot thing, you mm-hmm. know? It just seems really selfish. But then you see him, like, from a father perspective, and it makes him seem less selfish.
Right, which is interesting because that is, I don't know, that is what Lindsay had told us last week. Is like, I really love the way he is with my daughter, like, and my yeah. mother. And, like, that those are positive things. And I don't know, it's like, again, from last week, I feel like in a weird way it works because
yes.
what kept her in the drug dealing game? What was it? Was the money. She couldn't say no to the
yeah.
money. She needed to have a lot of money around. And like, so you yeah. date a guy who has a lot of money to throw around. And it's all of a sudden it's like, well, now I don't have to deal drugs to get all the money because, and it, is it shallow? Yeah, absolutely. It's shallow, but it mm-hmm. like fits. And it's like one of those things that I
yes.
could see it working just because his, you know, ostentatious way of showing off money and her kind of greed like fit together and it could work.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of saying it, like fits. And we kind of had talked about this last week, like they're a couple that we weirdly think are going to stick it out and be together and like it's going to be a thing. And not necessarily because they love each other and they love everything, because this is a transactional relationship and it just so happens that a lot of the pieces just really work out in this transaction. So, I don't know. I did get a better impression of him through this. And like I said, it kind of pained me a little bit because it was very easy to kind of paint him as the villain.
Right.
Especially like the first episode that we saw him on. Especially when he's like saying somewhat delusional things like, this isn't a scam. It's like, well, I don't know. Do you know the definition of a scam?
And I don't know. I feel like when you're in a relationship where you have to say those words out loud, this relationship yeah. is not a scam. We're yeah. already in like the at least yellow orange flag zone. Like, wait, why?
Right.
Right. It's like that Twitter joke. The, you know, there's like this T-shirt already answers a lot of raises a lot of questions that are answered by the T-shirt.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I just also kind of feel like he always wants to flaunt that she's so beautiful, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like all these things. It's just like, eesh,
right.
I don't know if I really super like the guy. But at least it seems like he's going to treat her right.
True.
But then I don't know. And then I think the thing that I struggle with is, but then is he taking advantage of her in some weird way? But then again, she's taking advantage of him. So then it's like hard
it's
to
like
feel sorry
evens
for anyone.
Out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really actually a lot more curious at this point about Lindsay's story because they kind of brushed mm-hmm. over, oh, it's her mom and she raised her. So it's her mom, which I totally agree with. The person that raises you is your mom.
Yeah.
But biologically, it's her grandma. And so it was like, but then they kind of.
She looked the same age as Scott. I know. I was so confused. I was like, wow.
But then they kind of like went past that because Lindsay seems, at least ostensibly, you know, at least what she's showing us, to. Mm-hmm. She's taking 100% full responsibility for her actions. She's like, I did this. I wanted the money. I had the bad drug habit. I'm not bad at being good. Right. And it's like, but I feel like there's some kind of broken stuff that's in there somewhere. And it wasn't just
this person
that randomly decided to be bad.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you think about it, she's obviously been abandoned by her mom if her grandma is raising her. So there's that situation. There might be a history of, you know, the cycle in her family of teenage moms.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's how they kind of got to the situation to begin with. Because Miley Grace is like, what, 10?
She's 10. Yeah. So that means she was like 17.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was young. And like I said, I didn't believe that that was grandma.
Right.
But it makes sense if grandma was a teen mom and then, you know, Lindsay's mom was a teen mom. It's like, okay, that would put grandma around 50, which is what she looked in the show.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of checks out. So, I mean, that, you know, family stability, I'm sure has something to do with her addiction and some of the problems and things like that.
Yeah. I just, I really hope it works out just for Miley Grace's like sake.
Yes.
Because that
always makes you.
Yeah. She's just, she's.
When kids are involved.
Yeah. I mean, she's just she's a, you know, cute little girl who's got the whole world ahead of her. And it's like, and she doesn't really have anybody else to turn to or rely on. Like some of the other people, you know, they have a mom and their dad is messing up, or they have a dad and their mom's messing up. Like, this is all she's got.
Yeah. And that's kind of crazy to think about, but that's her great grandma who's raising her right now.
Yeah.
And her great grandma isn't very old either.
No.
Doesn't look very old, at least. Oh, my goodness. Speaking of children, let's move on to Sean and Destiny. So Sean calls Destiny and gives her the great news that he has paid her bond, so she will be released tomorrow. He emphasizes that she has a pretty extensive rap sheet, and he wants her to reassure him that she will not mess up because he will be personally out a lot of money. She tells him that she has changed and the person she has become wouldn't be possible without the things that she's done. She then pivots to talking about their meeting. She tells him that she doesn't want to be judged for her looks and prepares him for the worst, telling him that she will have no makeup on and she's about at least 20 pounds heavier, but she'll do the best to look her best. Sean says he believes in her. We find out that Sean pulled out of his 401k and savings account to pay for her bond. Sean is meeting up with Kelly, his ex and baby mama. He says the first major hurdle will be Destiny meeting Kelly, which will be necessary for Destiny to meet his kids. Kelly tells us that she believes Destiny is either not real or she's just playing games. Kelly starts to flip out when Sean tells her that Destiny will be living with him as soon as she gets out. Kelly is concerned that this stranger who has been to prison for drugs will be around her children, and she questions if Destiny will be able to stay away from drugs once she is out. Kelly insists that people don't change because of prison and demands to know how much Sean has spent on her. From what he told us last episode, he lies to Kelly and downplays it by saying, oh, you know, a few thousand. And even with the much lower amount, Kelly is shocked, and the first thing she says is, what about our kids? You could have spent that on them. Kelly then accuses Destiny of going after Sean's money, and he says that that's not fair and that she's prejudging and that he wants to marry her. Kelly brings up the fact that they have been together for 22 years, but they had never gotten married. She is insulted and feels like she meant nothing to him. She was good enough to have his 6 kids, but not good enough to get married. Kelly says that she will need to approve of Destiny before the children will meet her. Sean then has a sidebar with Gracie, his daughter, who is 16. Sean tells her that he has a girlfriend who is in prison for drugs that will be living with him. Gracie says that's kind of a big deal. She wants him to be happy and questions why she actually has to move in. Gracie is crying and tells him that she feels like he's trying to start a new family. Gracie doesn't want to meet her until she is convinced that her dad just isn't being used. All right, so Kelly brought up a really valid point. Why do you think Sean is so quick to want to marry Destiny without even seeing her, but was so reluctant to marry his baby mama Kelly?
I don't know. I mean, I can't. It was the same thing I was mind boggled about. Like, he just, And it says, it almost says more about Kelly than it does about him. Like she was just okay being around, like, fine. He's like, all right, fine, I'm bored.
Well, it didn't sound like she was okay with that.
No.
Like, Kelly sounded like she wanted to be married to
him. No, I absolutely agree with that. Kelly, yeah. It seems to me the dynamic I got from that relationship was Kelly has always wanted to be married to him. And yes. He's been kind of like, meh. And she just she could never get herself to just, you know, to quit him and be like, fine, you're never going to do this. I'm done. We're leaving. Because the impression that I really got from Kelly and especially from Gracie is they all just kind of expected that he was going to come back eventually.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's really appropriate thinking, because I can definitely see Kelly, like, I don't know, I'm not saying she intentionally got pregnant, but maybe viewing the pregnancy, her first one, as like, okay, you know, this is serious. Having a baby is serious. Maybe this guy will commit, you know? And then they have the baby. And, you know, maybe he's there for her. Maybe he's a active dad and he's really helping out, but still no proposal, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe she talks about it with him. Maybe she doesn't. But then, you know, they get pregnant again. And it's like, then the same thing happens. Okay, after the second child, wouldn't you be like, this guy is just not getting the hint?
Yeah.
He's just not proposing. Kids doesn't seem to be the change needed for him to feel convinced that this should officially be a family in the sense of, you know, a marriage.
A marriage, like, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, because it was crazy. Like, so he clearly wasn't. And so I understand Kelly being super upset, because it clearly is it's not like you were afraid of commitment in general. Like, right. It's not you're afraid of marriage in general. They're going to marry this random person, right? That, and you wouldn't, because it would make sense if, like, it's the on-off thing that gets me, because it makes sense. I totally get. Obviously, being a divorced person, having kids with somebody and be like, you know, we've grown apart and this just isn't working anymore and we just need to go do something else. But at that point, I was like, you were good enough to marry at some point, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like you're not good enough anymore. It's just like it's just not working anymore. We talked about the fit in the last time. It just doesn't fit. Whereas if you keep coming back and having kids with the person, there's something there that fits and it hasn't broken yet, but you're still like, no, not yet. We're not going to get married. So, but then to turn around and within like 4 months of not even meeting this other person, be like, yeah, we're thinking marriage. Like, that's what the hell?
Yeah, that's so insulting, because I kind of get the impression because I know Kelly, but it's like you've seen this happen with like friends and, you know, things like that. It's like that person who is just always holding on hope. Mm-hmm. To something that they're idealizing in their mind and thinking like something's going to change. This person is one day going to wake up and realize that they just cannot live without me.
Right.
And that I am the one. And so you keep on like doing things like breaking up with the person because you're like, they're just not getting it.
Right.
I'm just done. You know, and then it's like that hope, like, oh, well, maybe if I break up with them, they'll like figure out that, you know, like they just can't live without me. And so that's part of what keeps you going back.
If that person ever came back, they'd take them back. Like that's the situation. We're the six kids in the on-off relationship. But like, because what got me is he's just so unaware of what's going on.
Oh, he is. He's that, so like, clueless.
He had no idea how, and we've all been there too. He had no idea how much what he was saying was hurting. Like, to just throw it out there like it was just a matter of like, oh, we're thinking about getting married. Like, you just throwing knives at people. You don't even know it. You're just chucking them back over your shoulder.
That's like my ex. Like, I dated him for 5 years. And he always had said to me, like, well, I'm not really sure, you know, about getting married. Like, I don't know. I just kept on feeling like, you know, there was something that was going to hit me, like, yes, I want to be married. But instead, he just was always unsure. And so it got to the point where I was like, okay, we're done. Like, you're either sure, you're not sure. And he was just always unsure. So it's not that he was ever like, I don't want to marry you. Right. But it was just like, I'm not sure if I want
to
marry you.
But even still, that's even to the other point. I'm not sure if I want to marry you. And then, like, if they leave and, like, or not even leave, if they're still there, you still talk to them all the time. And, like, 6 months later, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm sure now. And be like, what the hell?
That's, yeah, like what happened?
What happened? Changed. Yeah.
Well, and so, like, we were broken up for, like, maybe 2 years, and then he started dating someone 6 months after they were dating, proposed to her. And it's just, like, things like that, you know? It's, like, my thought of it at the time was that I wasn't really mad that he was, like, engaged to someone else, and I wasn't jealous, mm-hmm. and, like, my first thought was, like, well, that's someone else's problem. That was, like, quite honestly my first thought. But it's just like you become really resentful of things that you can't change, you know? Like, to me, what would make me feel better in that situation is I want my fucking 5 years back, mm-hmm. right? But you can't change that, right? So I feel like Kelly, like in the situation, she's like, I want my fucking 22 years back.
22 years. Because his was even, I would posit that his is worse because.
Oh, for sure. It's
worse. Well, obviously, but 22 years. But
22 years, 6 kids, and then what is it, 9 months?
I cannot get over the 6 kids because you,
yeah.
at that point, it just sounds like you keep having kids with this woman to just keep her hanging around.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. been another couple years, time to have another kid so she doesn't marry somebody else. Like, try to do that. Like, and so, and then to then turn around and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to marry this woman because.
Right. She... After knowing her for 9 months. And to me, that's like the most insulting part of all. It's like mm-hmm. for you to date someone for such a short amount of time and then kind of turn around and say like, this person's the one, I'm so sure of them. It's like, how can you be so sure of someone and then waste your time because you're so unsure of someone else? And I think that was the thing that really upset me about my ex was, you know, I had a low moment. I looked at their wedding website and when I found out that they were engaged and the thing that he had written about his, you know, his fiance at the time, you know, was things like, people always said that, you know, when you meet the one, you know, and I never believed that until I met her. And I was like, motherfucker, 5 years.
But he was unsure. So he was like, oh.
Oh, my gosh. So things like that where it's just like, right. You know, it's like, I get that you're unsure and that, you know, and it's like, even now I'm like somewhat understanding, like, that's fine that you're unsure, but I don't need to stick around for you to be unsure.
I mean, absolutely. I guess, yeah.
How much time do you really need to be sure? And I think I don't know. I feel like you either got to like shit or get off the pot, right? And it doesn't need to be this open-ended thing. So I think for me right now, like if I were to kind of put this in the context, if I was in this situation, I didn't realize I was in the situation, I think at this point in my life, I'd give it a year.
Yeah.
If in a year you don't know, like we're done. And you know, I don't think you're ever gonna know past that year. You know, what's going to change to, obviously 6 kids won't change your mind.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, but she's sitting there being like, well, I could have been looking for somebody else. No, I'm sitting here being like, it would be great. And especially it depends on why. Why didn't she move on? Did she not move on because she thought it was best for the kids that their father, that if she was going to be married to somebody, it should be their father? Because then she's
I feel like
I don't know what was hanging him around because, you know, I'm a dad. And so I watch this girl and like feel terrible for her, worse than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The dad is just like, I fell in love with a drug addict. She's moving into my house. Like,
oh, God. Okay, but let's also be real about the situation. Like, does Kelly have a whole lot of really great options out there considering she's got kind of the baggage of 6 kids and not even, like, baggage, like, people will, like, you know, judge her for having 6 kids. It's more so, do you even have time to date?
Right.
You are raising 6 children, and I am presuming by herself because Sean seems to be doing whatever the hell he wants to do, mm-hmm. right? So if you're having to literally take care of 6 children, I can't imagine dating in that context is easy.
No, it's gotta be super hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gotta be really difficult. So it's like, she might not have the options that someone who, like, I'm going to throw it out there, maybe like a deadbeat dad like Sean has, right? Where she ignores the needs of the children to spend $35,000 on her partner, you know? That's like, we'll get into that too. Like, come on, Sean, you're going to lie to Kelly about how much money you spent on Destiny, like uh-huh. by an absurd amount.
By, like,
and
tenfold.
Kelly was absolutely,
like, tenfold.
Yes. Kelly was absolutely right to be upset by even a few $1,000. And we even said this, like, you're the worst dad.
They were shopping at a used clothes store when he told her this. Like, it's not like they're rolling in money. They're broke.
But he made it sound like he was last week when he was like, I'm financially able to spend it. So if I have the money, I don't see a problem.
I'm also financially able. When I went to the car dealership, they were like, yeah, we can give you an $80,000 car. And I was like, what? No. I can't afford that.
You're like,
that.
Oh, so my credit score says I can get that car, but
I feel like that's a great
that
way to not have a good credit score is to buy things that you're just because your credit score says you can get it. Yeah.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah. So I feel like he doesn't make the best decisions when it comes to his kid. And so I'm going to like go out on a limb. Maybe it's a bit controversial and call him a bit of a deadbeat dad. And so it's like, for him, he probably is really selfish and is like, I want to date this person. Like, I'm not going to let my 6 kids scare that person off, because didn't we also say that we think Sean is lying about his 6 kids to Destiny?
That's
and
correct.
She might not even know he has 6 kids.
Because we're also thinking there's a good chance that she doesn't go to this hearing that she's supposed to go to. And now he's out
$50,000. Oh, in addition to the
$35,000. In addition
so that's
to the
$35,000.
That's $85,000. Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, you couldn't. How could you? Oh, I don't even know how you could take that risk
away from your kids.
Just the bond. Like, I'll be like, sorry, I can't. Because I'm not going to take any bond that I can't afford the bail on. Yes, I will buy the bond. But if I can't back it up, I'm not going to do it definitely not for somebody else.
Yeah. So just Sean making terrible life decisions, and I feel so, so bad for Kelly and the children.
Right. And it was so weird, because at the beginning she was like, well, you've changed me, and you know, everything I am is because of you. He just seems like such a bland, boring person. It's like, who are you talking to? It can't be this guy that's been talking on camera. It cannot be the same person that, you know, got into your soul and you know, brought new things and changed you from the roots. Like that. That can't be him. You're just saying that to get the money.
Yeah, I don't know. It will be interesting. It'll be interesting to actually meet her. And I think next time we'll actually see her.
Yes, I think they're intentionally, because of the lack of pictures, really trying to, get as much blood out of this orange as they can, blood out of this stone as they can to, like, before we see her.
Right. Okay, so we still have not heard from Heather and Dylan and Tyrese and Chandra, or Shonda.
Yeah, I was surprised we got exactly the same couples this time.
I was also surprised.
But we get the new ones. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so who was your student of the week of who we had left?
I went with Scott, actually. Just for, I mean, it's always slim pickings on this show for student of the week.
This one especially.
Yes.
90 Day Fiancé, we can at least manage to muster
up
someone.
Just for being good with the kid. Like,
yeah.
We saw two people deal with kids. One was good with the kid. One was, I think, not as smart as the kid and not as emotionally aware as the kid, anything. So I liked seeing him do that. You like the thing. They were playing on the swing, you know, heartfelt story about his son. So I went with Scott.
Oh, okay, fair enough. I considered it, and then I was just like, I don't know. Is he just so terrible from before? I don't know. So my student of the week, I said Jessica. She just genuinely seems to love Maurice. And what I also appreciated about Jessica is she had mentioned that, you know, there's a possibility that I'm being used. So, I mean, the fact that she's even admitting and not like completely delusional, I think is a step up from most people on this show.
It certainly is.
Where it's like, no way. He loves me. I would never be used. At least she is, you know, contemplating the possibility of it, which I was just
nobody else knows him like I do.
Yeah, I know, right? How many times have we heard that one too? So, I mean, like, I was like, okay, good for you, Jessica. At least you're going into the situation with your eyes wide open. You know, like, I hope the best, but, you know, yeah. All right, what about your dunce?
My dunce was Quaylon. Just because I hate when people lie. I don't like when people lie.
Yeah.
But I really hate when people lie when it's incredibly obvious that your lies are going to get found out. And when exactly they're going to get found out.
Yeah, you know, down to the date The date is when they get in the car together.
You knew exactly when this was going to go wrong, and you did nothing to stop it. You're just like...
Oh, and you knew that when they found out that you would not be there for the consequences.
That's true, right.
You're like, oh, yes, let the women fight it out.
Yeah, let the women fight it out. They'll tell me where I'm going when they get out of the car, and I don't have to do anything. So it's like, stupid, dumb manipulator. Dumb manipulations.
Yeah, well... Speaking of which, I actually said the dunce was Quaylandria. So I said, obviously, her son lied to someone. So instead of bullying everyone into getting your own way, realize he's a grown-ass man and he's going to make decisions that will either land him in jail or keep him out. Mm-hmm. But there's really nothing that she can do to ensure one or the other.
Right. Well, the problem with Quaylandria, or the issue with Quaylandria, I should say, is he's still 17 to her.
Yes, that's true.
She thinks of him as he paused at 17. He's still 17 right now. Why are you taking my? And so she sees this you know, grown woman with a child. Is like, why are you with my 17-year-old son? You're creepy. Get out of here.
Yeah, that's true. So, like I said, she just needs to realize he's a grown ass man, because she definitely like mom pursing everyone here, like shaking her finger, like, no, this is how it's gonna be. I'm mom. I know better. You know, and it's just like, well, you know, first of all, you're not Chevelle's mom. You can't just tell her, like, this is how it's going to be. Uh-huh. And then Quaylon,
oh, man. What if she had talked like that in front of Chevelle's mom? I'd like to see the mom fight.
Oh, gosh.
Because Chevelle's mom would not have been about that.
No, she would not have been. That would have been interesting. Yeah, that would have been good. All right, what about your life lesson?
So, I mean, we obviously kind of covered it already, but yeah, there has to be a time limit on what you're willing to wait for someone or something to happen that's clearly not going to happen. And 22 years is well past the expiration
that's
date.
That's excessive.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Do they not have palimony? Like, how is he not having to pay more for, like, common law marriage or situation?
Different states have completely different rules. Like, a lot of states don't have a common law marriage law.
Oh, that's unfortunate for them. Because she deserves it, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, she,
like, Kelly has put in her time. She deserves money.
She getting what? What money? I guess that $35,000. Well, he cashed out his 401k for that. So, I mean, if I'm Kelly and you cash out your 401k, it's basically like, yeah, I'm not writing you checks when you get old then. Like, you're done.
Yeah.
It's not money that should have been mine, could have been mine if we had an arrangement. Like, wow.
Yeah. So my life lesson actually is inspired from John. It's a terrible idea to put someone on the spot to propose a marriage that is supposed to happen less than an hour from the time that you propose, because you've given them absolutely no time to think about the answer of something that is meant to be a lifetime commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he had said something to the effect of they've only like mentioned marriage a couple of times. It's not something they had talked about seriously. Like, because you know my opinion of that, of especially putting people on the spot. But like,
oh, yeah,
you have to, when you get down on one knee and ask, your confidence level should be above 99%, right? Like, this should be something we've already talked about building a life together. We've already had conversations about this kind of stuff. It's not just out of nowhere, like, married?
Question mark.
And then especially when you put them on the spot to then be like, okay, great, let's lock it down now. Like that.
Yeah, like in an hour. Like, well, not even that. How long does it take for us to drive over to park? That's when we're happening.
It had to go from proposal to wedding to banging in the back seat in 40 minutes.
Oh, God, yeah. So I just, that's terrible setup. I feel like I can see her saying yes because she's just excited to be out of prison.
Yeah.
And like, there's other emotions involved that have nothing to do with John. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's horny. She's just like, okay, well, if I say yes, we'll have sex.
And nobody should make any major life decisions when they're horny. That's
true.
100% true all the time. Maybe that should have been my life lesson. Don't make major life decisions when you're horny. But yeah. But she definitely is. And it's like, I can't imagine such a drastic life change of like getting out of prison. And then his good idea of a great thing to do for this recovering drug addict is to throw another major life change on top of that. Like, literally one of the top like five most stressful things you can do. And it's like, oh yeah, that's my good plan for us. This is not cool.
Right. So I just, I can see her saying yes, but that doesn't really mean she really feels yes.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
So, and then it's like, at that point, how do you back out of it? Because you're literally getting married. It's like, you say yes, and okay, here's the consequences, like, immediately.
Immediately. That's so, yeah. It's so weird and so pushy and, ugh. Yeah. I mean, I almost made John my class dunce, but he was my class dunce last week, so.
Oh, yeah. So giving a little diversity here.
I wanted to spread it out.
All right. So that about wraps up the show. And we're going to be back again next week. But before we're gone, the last thing I would like to wrap up with is a little bit of social media rumor roundup. But these are definitely spoilers for this current season. So if you're not interested in hearing any spoilers, we don't have anything after this. So you can just kind of tune out and not be spoiled.
All right.
All right. So I was digging a deep, deep hole on StarCasm and found out a lot about these couples. So I talked to you a little bit about some of these Mr. O before, but I thought we would discuss some of them.
Okay.
So we had talked about Sean and Destiny and Sean giving a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it ends up StarCasm has reported that Sean and Kelly have bad financial situation where they've had garnished wages, they filed for bankruptcy, they, I think, have had tax evasion.
Oh.
And then Sean actually, and they've also set up GoFundMes.
Oh.
And so this whole idea that Sean has all this money and that he's comfortable, and that's the reason why he's willing to give $85,000 to Destiny, is just absurd.
Okay. Yeah, that's yikes. Well, I mean, garnished wages, I almost always associate that with child support. Like, they garnish wages for child support. But sure. It could be a whole bunch of other fines and things that
they end up doing. Well, especially bankruptcies involved.
Yeah, bankruptcies, taxes, right? They'll garnish the wages to pay back taxes and stuff like that. So,
right.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't trust – would you trust Sean to do your taxes?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, but he doesn't seem like a money guy, obviously. Like, what is he spending his money on to begin with, you know?
Right.
It's like, oh, $35,000, and then lying about it, too. That's also not a good sign.
No.
You know, especially with someone that I'm sure their finances are very much have been tied in the past.
Yeah, they have to be.
Even currently. Yeah. Because, I mean, for that many kids.
Right.
Absolutely, you need to be upfront about your financial situation. And so the fact that he's lying to Kelly about that, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Other things that I heard on some good news, Maurice and Jessica actually just had a baby 2 months ago.
Oh, good for them. Congratulations.
Yeah. So it looks like things have been working out for them. It's a baby boy. And I forget what the name was. It's escaping me at the moment.
Well, that's good. I don't like watching the show when everybody is a total disaster. Yeah. I like having those palate cleansers that are like, oh, they're not bad. I can see where they're coming from.
Right, yeah. So their baby's a little bit premature, but seems to be doing okay. I think they came probably about a month early.
Mm.
Other things that I found on StarCasm is that John and Christiana actually did get married. So we kind of talked
about.
So
we'll see that next week, I guess.
Yeah. The speculation is that they got married because I guess... Well, then the other big spoiler is that Christiana ended up going back to jail about a month after. And so they said that her arrest records actually had John's last name on it. So there's speculation, even though they haven't come up with a marriage certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know if he pulled the marriage certificate for his little wedding. That's weird. I didn't think it was. Who was even the officiant? I didn't. So many questions. Okay. What else did you find out?
Well, we'll find some of this out, right?
Right.
Oh, and then kind of going back to Sean and Destiny, one last thing I forgot to say about them is that Destiny ends up will not be a catfish.
Well, I mean, it depends on your definition of catfish. That's what's always weird when you hear people say catfish is like, what?
Using someone else's pictures.
Right.
I think using your own pictures from 10 years ago isn't a catfish. It's not being 100% honest, but
so it could be, you could still be a scammer, just not a catfish. Like, the people or person in the pictures was her. She might not have any intention of being with him at all and might just take his money and skip town, But that would make her not a catfish. Right.
Right, right. So catfish, I think we can agree on, just means you use someone else's pictures to set up a profile. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it is her. And honestly, they Starcasm, they took some screen grabs from some previews. And they did some comparisons, and they also did things like mugshots and looking up her name on the mugshots.
Right.
And so it definitely appears to be her. And I was going to say, I don't know why she's so down on herself in the preview screen grabs. It doesn't look all that different, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they really are definitely trying to play up the whole mystery. She said
20 pounds, and 20 pounds is significant, but it's not like...
Oh, it is.
It's not like, you know, I don't feel like it's...
Obese or anything
like
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say, my sister, I think she gained like 40 pounds pregnancy weight. And it's like, yeah, it's obvious. But I mean, at the same time, she doesn't look like morbidly obese or not even real chunky.
You would only think they look big because you know what they look like before.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because if you had just met my sister, you would have just thought, oh, she's just average.
Yeah.
But I mean, she was pretty skinny before. Mm-hmm. And based on the pictures, Destiny looked pretty skinny before.
Right.
So if anything, like 20 pounds could just make her look like healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I don't even know if she would look chubby. Right.
Right. You're just like, oh, good. Because my parents say that, too. I think I had gained 5 pounds. I'm like, oh, you look so much healthier. It's like, thanks. Yeah. I think that's all I can remember. I don't want to project anything that's not truth. So
okay.
Those are our spoilers for this week. So thank you, Starcasm, for that. And... We will be back next week then.
Next week. We'll see everybody then. All right.
All right. Okay. Okay. Bye.